Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
I want to start this interview by asking you what are the situation in Kharkiv now. We know that Russians are constantly targeting Kharkiv region and there are talks about Russian offensive in Sumy and Kharkiv region in the coming months. What are the situation in Kharkiv?
The situation is very unstable, So we still have rockets, shellings from time to time with drones, with rockets. They are very unpredictable and hit different districts within the city. Still unsafe, unpredictable, but life goes on, people live, everything works. But of course, from time to time, we have air alarm and rockets and bombing. Fortunately, Russia is too close and our military can't predict when and where it happened. I mean, they can't tell people about the rockets.
And most people are already used to it and don't go to the shelters or the
exactly. People in Kharkiv, unfortunately, they changed their behavior maybe after half a year of such. You just can't live in this total stress and hide every time you hear an alarm. That's why people stopped doing this, because it's just too often. And there are not enough shelters, underground shelters, not everywhere. And it's just impossible. So Kharkiv is a very unusual city. Not only Kharkiv, I guess Sumy has the same, all these frontline cities, they just can't stop their life because air alarms and shellings, bombings are too often to hide from them.
Before we talk about the center and work you do, has your center got maybe damaged or any of your employees or volunteers hurt by the Russian attacks?
If you're talking about people, our team in Kharkiv is safe, but unfortunately one of our volunteers in Poltava city, she was killed by a rocket on 1st of February, and it was our first lost. She was quite young, a young woman who died not even on the street, but in her flat because of this bombing. So that was our biggest loss till now. And if we are talking about buildings, one of our facilities had damaged because it's still situated in Filmonico Park. It is a private zoo very close to the Kharkiv, just after Round Bend Road. And unfortunately, it's on the north, close to the border. And it was Russians hit it during the first month in the beginning of the war. And we had a flying cage there, so exactly our flying cage for bats, it was damaged. But we repaired it since then, so it's more or less stable. But still, this territory is not very safe to go there, this private zoo, Filmonico Park, because from time to time they have some, not fightings, but bombings and missiles, and situation is very unstable too. So that's one of our facility. And the second one, which was in the Kharkiv city, it is close to Barabashova. It's the biggest market in eastern Ukraine. And unfortunately, very close to our office, there was a fire, huge fire on this market. Our building was more or less fine, but around that it was terrible. And we moved from this office building, I guess it's around 1 year, almost 1 year ago, last summer. We moved from this building because it was too difficult to stay there. We were the last people who stayed in this office building. And we occupied the last floor, and it started to flood with water from the roof. So the conditions were terrible. And finally, we moved last summer. We moved to a new office space. It's in a basement now in the Kharkiv city, but in a basement, not the last floor, but we choose basement. It's safer for people. It's safer for beds. So now we have better conditions than than before that.
Well, we know that, of course, during this war, everyone's suffering, not only people are suffering, but animals are also suffering. So how do you see this when you look at the bats, when you look at the situation with them? Do you see that they are being impacted by the war, how they are impacted by the war, I don't know, shelling, bombing and so on? What are the consequences to the bats with this war?
Yeah, of course they were and they are impacted by the war. And actually we published a paper about that in Kharkiv, about bats in Kharkiv city. Because as you know, war started in winter. That's the period of bat hibernation period. And of course, like many buildings in Kharkiv, they were destroyed because of bombing, shellings. Not even people died, not even pets died, but pets also died in those buildings because they were hibernating inside crevices, balconies, as I told you. And when they destroyed buildings, like many colonies died inside those buildings. We don't know exact numbers, but at least what we know, we knew about some colonies in those buildings in Saltovka region in Kharkiv. And then in summer 22, we checked some of those buildings, if they were destroyed or not. And we actually found some destroyed buildings who potentially could have bats inside it. So the biggest impact that this destroying of hibernaculums, of roosts, which are buildings, in fact, that the biggest threat for bats, especially in winter, you know, when Russians destroyed buildings, they destroyed not only buildings and they kill not only people and pets, but they kill bats inside those buildings. It's very difficult to count them, but we know for sure that there were hibernating colonies, especially in February. Not even in 22, but in the next years, the same. And they destroyed so many cities, towns, yeah, small towns on the front line. So impact is quite big. And, you know, when bats hibernate, they are inactive. They can't escape. They can't fly. So they simply die if building destroys.
How hard it was to adapt to working during the war. Like, yeah, you needed to get most of your shelters and working and operations like under the ground because of the war, and electricity generators because of the, you know, there could be electricity shortages. Yes. So hard, yeah, how hard it was to adapt. Yeah.
Yeah, especially in the beginning, it was the hardest time was in the beginning, first 3-4 months, because in the beginning of war, Kharkiv is very close to the border. Mm-hmm. So because of these bombings and shellings, our metro stopped. In the beginning, it was difficult to get to our office because Kharkiv is quite a big city. So our members, they need to walk to the office sometimes more than 1 hour to take bets. And in the beginning of war, my colleague, he built a self-release cage, because at that time we had, I guess, 2,000 of bats hibernating in fridge in our office space, and 1,000 of bats were in this flying cage out of the city, which was unreached at the time because Russians were very close to it. So bats hibernated there till March, and only in the end of March we were able to evacuate those bats from the Echo Park area. Luckily, they were alive, they were in good conditions, everything was fine. And the second part in the office, he built a self-release cage because we understood that bats can die. You know, if there will be electricity shortage, fridges will just switch off and bats can die inside it. So we decided to release them, even though it was February, a little bit too early for them to fly. But it was better rather than have them died inside the fridge. So we released them earlier than expected. And yeah, it was difficult then to walk to the office because there were no metro. And for a few months, we kept bats at our homes, the same as in the beginning of our Bat Rehab Center. So up to 300 of bats lived in our homes of my team because, yeah, they were not ready to fly because of, for example, bad body conditions or some fractures. That was the biggest challenge. And then in winter 22, 23, there was a period of these electricity shortages. Luckily, in Kharkiv, it was not so often as, for example, it was in western part of Ukraine, in Kyiv. But yeah, we had this generator in our office, and we used it from time to time because we needed to run fridges. It was also difficult because in that winter 22-23, there were almost no heating in the office, and my team members, they need to sit, in jackets, in hats, and it was so cold. I mean, for beds it was good, but for people working with them, it was really challenging because we were the only one who stayed in that building, in that office building. The rest people just escaped, evacuated from it, but we were the only one. And it was quite cold, and sometimes without light, without electricity. But it was in the first year. Then it was not so difficult. And now we have this basement office. It's much, much more better, way better than the previous one with the last floor and running ceiling and cold conditions inside. So now we are in better conditions, and there were sometimes challenges.
At the main place where you gather all the bats and you do the work is in Kharkiv. The center is there, but it's like not like, I don't know, a big hangar or something. You do all this in a basement, yes?
It's a basement of a building, like big office, just placed in a basement. We don't need an hangar. We need quite warm conditions because and electricity, of course. Our beds hibernate in fridges in winter, and we need a lot of electricity in winter. We have eight fridges for beds.
But so you need how much space do you need? The bats are, many of the bats.
No, now we have around 100 square meters, around that. I'm not sure, maybe a little bit more than 100, but around that. So there are a few rooms, different zones. One of room is hibernaculum, where bats hibernate, cold conditions. Other room is for our veterinarians. We have a lot of bats in care with different fractures, injuries. So we divided our space into different, not even rooms, but parts of this office. And the main space, it's a big, very big table. I don't know if you need pictures, I can send it to you. But there is one big table where people usually sit, and where we invite volunteers, and they help us to feed bats. Because in winter, the most challenging task is to feed bats who are not in very good conditions, who need to gain some weight in order to continue hibernation. So we feed them, hand feed them a lot. That's why we have very big table where usually people sit, and they just hand feed bats with mealworms and super mealworms, insects.
But do you bring bats to the center specifically for the winter period, or are there bats? Some of them are still like staying there during the summer and other periods, or.
We have both of them, but the majority of bats whom we get to the center, they are found in winter because winter is very difficult period for them. In nature, they hibernate, and they hibernate thanks to their fat reserves. They don't eat, they slow down all their process, and they go something similar to sleep, but it's not directly sleep. It's called torpor, and they decrease all their process in their body. And if people wake them up, I mean lay people, not we, but usually we receive those pets whom people woke up. For example, during repair works, because people are afraid of bats and they don't like when bats live very close to them, for example, on their balconies or under the windows, or during window replacement, sometimes people find hibernating bats. They hibernate in different crevices, small hollows, crevices between floor crevices in balconies, under the windows. They don't need so much space. They just hide there and sit still and sleep there, hibernate there. So usually during repair works or during some complaints from people about bats on their balcony, people want to get rid of them. So they find them and they want to get rid of them. And it's good when they call us and ask, can you take them out from us? But sometimes people don't know about us, or they don't want to save bats or help them. They're just afraid of them, and they throw them out of the window, and people or volunteers find them on the ground, and then they call us and we come and take them into our care. And during winter we can't release them because winters in Ukraine quite hard. Usually we have these freezing temperatures and just can't fly in conditions, weather conditions. So we have to keep them till spring in winter. And we keep them till spring and then release them back to wild. At the same time, we receive quite big number of injured bats with broken wings, with some injuries on the head, different fractures. And sometimes they can fly after treatment, sometimes they can't. So, for example, now we released all healthy bats, we released them back to wild, but more than 100 bats still stay with us because they have such health problems and they are not flying, at least now. We need to train them, we need to treat them. Some of them will fly, some of them won't, and they will stay with us for such a lifelong rehabilitation. Bats live quite long, up to 15 years, and we keep them for this lifelong rehabilitation.
So, well, basically, they, like you said, they live in different places, not like maybe we see often in the movies, you know, only in the caves where there are many creepy bats and so on. So they live in different places, yeah.
Yeah, they live in caves too, but the thing is that in Kharkiv we don't have caves in eastern part of Ukraine. It's not mountainous region, so we don't have caves. Sometimes we have man-made mines, this underground small like a burrows. But the biggest problem, and actually why we started our bat rehab center, was the reason that bats started to live in buildings. They started to roost in buildings, they started to hibernate in buildings in our cities. For example, 40 years ago it was quite rare situation. But now with climate change, with these warmer winters, bats started to change their behavior and they started to hibernate in buildings. Mostly that is the one species, Nyctalis noctula, common noctule bat. Yeah? So they started to hibernate in our cities. They didn't do that 40 years ago, and there were no such problem, probably. There were some synanthropic species who lived in cities, they were, but they were not so massive as noctules now. And that's why we have this big problem, huge problem of bats occupying cities, I mean, occupying in good terms. And they live close to people, so the biggest threat for them are people. Because people are afraid of these nocturnal animals. Bats live in big numbers. They form colonies up to 1,000 bats. And when you have 1,000 of bats in your balcony and they start to scream, that's quite loud. And that's why people don't like such neighbors and they want to get rid of them. And that's why our center, like we work a lot with people and we try to keep them calm, you know, try to find solution how to coexist with bats. And sometimes we success, sometimes we don't, and we receive all these big numbers. This happens not only in Kharkiv. We are called Ukrainian Bat Rehab Center because we collect bats from all over Ukraine. And the same situation is in Kyiv, in Dnipro, in Poltava, Rivne, in Lviv, many cities, in Odessa, all across Ukraine. Our buildings, they are quite bad, but they are quite good in terms of bats, because of these crevices. Yeah. And they just started to occupy it because for bats, our buildings look very similar as rocks with caves, you know. Balcony looks very similar as a small cave, probably for them. That's why. And temperature conditions are very similar to what they have in nature in caves. And that's why they started to live in buildings. And that this is the main reason why we started to rescue them, because they live not in trees, they live in buildings and suffer from this people's attitude and this coexistence. And unfortunately, we have so many cases when people killed bats in huge numbers.
Because they were afraid, or bats
Because they were
are,
afraid, yes. Because they think that it's like rats, you know, like rodents, and they don't know who bats are, like cockroaches, you know, with like pests and so on. Like, for example, 15 years ago, we had so many cases of such rude, mean behavior from people.
But what do you say to people like, are bats dangerous? Can they bite you? And so on. What do you say to them? Because I think, well, like you said, some people are afraid, maybe something that they can bite or attacks.
Yeah, of course they are afraid because mostly because bats are nocturnal, and everything what is nocturnal makes us scary. We are daylife creatures, and that's normal. I can understand that as biologist, I understand behavior of people, and we try to explain more, you know, because knowledge is a power. When people know who bats are and how to deal with them, how to handle them, and so on, at least whom to call, because we are like the biggest bat conservation organization in the country, but we are not the only one. We have volunteers, we have partners, and if people ask, like people, professional people can come and help them to get rid of bats or rescue them, like whatever happens. And of course, we always tell not to handle them without gloves. Because bats are small creatures, of course, they are afraid too, and they try to bite you. But all these bites, that's because of fear. That's not because bats want to attack people. No, they don't want. They are scared of us and afraid of us.
So, like, only way that they can be dangerous to people, it's only that they can try to bite, yes, nothing else.
Yeah. They have rabies. They have it. I mean, the virus rabies. It's very dangerous when they bite, and if bat has rabies, it can be like really dangerous. But not all of bats has rabies. Only three species out of 28 species in Ukraine can have virus rabies. But of course, people don't recognize who is this, like, either that species or not. So usually, normally we say, please wear gloves each time you want to handle a bat. And we do the same because they look very similar, and only professionals can say what species is it. Yeah, rabies is real possibility. It's not so often happening even in Europe for past like 50 years. Up to 10 cases of bat rabies was mentioned. So it's quite rare comparing for stray dogs, for example. But usually people are afraid of rabies, and they're afraid of other diseases, potential diseases which wild animals can carry.
So, like you said, people call you when they need help. So it works like both ways. Like you receive calls, and you also your volunteers, and you are also looking for the bats and
No,
gathering. Or do you
no.
no?
We're not looking for them. We have enough, believe me. Each winter we have up to 4,000 of bats, so we are not looking for them. But of course, sometimes if I walk somewhere and I see bat on the ground, Once I found it even at my home, I mean, at my built-in house. So, of course, I won't pass by. I will take those. But usually we get them from people or from our partners because we have this network of volunteers and partners. And unfortunately, not all of them are ready to manage big colonies. So if, for example, our Lviv partner in Lviv city, if they receive colony more than 100 or 200 beds, they will call us and transfer beds from Lviv to Kharkiv because it's quite difficult to manage such a big colony if you don't have experience. And luckily, like, we have more than 12 years experience. And we know how to manage colony, how to measure them, weight, feed, and so on. That's a huge process. Mm-hmm. And we receive them from all around the country. Sometimes one, two, three beds, sometimes several hundreds, sometimes even 1,500, as it happened previous winter in Poltava. There was a colony of 1,500 beds in one balcony. That was the record up to now in numbers.
So it was, I don't know, big balcony or like the whole balcony was covered. And
yes, it was a balcony. Like, we have different size balcony. Yeah. It was quite big balcony. And beds, actually, they are quite small. They are around our thumb, finger, so they're not so big. And when they sit together, they don't occupy so much space.
And how complicated it is to take those bats to, I don't know, catch them and bring them to the center. Is it mostly easy to do this, or
yes,
does it get complicated sometimes, or how it? Yeah.
If people just destroyed their balcony during renovation or replaced windows, it's easy to just handle them because during hibernation, bats are very slow. They don't fly. I mean, their body temperature almost 1 degree above zero, so they're very, very slow and cold, and it's quite easy to collect them. But after that, after you bring them to Kharkiv, they wake up, and then they are very active, and it is difficult. We sort them according to their weight. When you wake them up in winter and they warm up, they use too much of their fat reserves, and then their weight goes down. And then they need to be fed with insects in order to gain more fat body mass. So all this transportation and collecting, it's very tricky because they can lose their weight. And then it will take time to put them to hibernation again. They are very, very vulnerable in winter during hibernation. That's why when people call us in winter and they ask, can you remove bats from my balcony or window, usually we say no, please don't touch them until spring, because winter is very, very difficult and very bad period for them to wake them up. They can die, and sometimes we have bats dying in our hands, in our center, because they don't have enough fat reserves and we are not able to refeed them. And sometimes even it's very difficult to feed them. It depends on the species, but there are some species which can't stay artificial conditions at all. So it's very difficult to save them. For example, Barbastella bats. Don't remember the common name, but Barbastella barbastellis, that is a Latin name. They are very difficult in captivity. So usually we ask people, please wait till spring if it's possible. Don't do repair works in winter at all, because you even might not know about such neighbors in your balcony or in your windows. No, it's very often it's a big surprise when people open and there are bats. Like, but unfortunately, in our country, we have so many of these replacements of windows by the end of the year in December because of money. Especially for governmental organizations, they receive the money in the end of the year. So mm-hmm. they start to do all these renovations in the end of the year, exactly the period when bats hibernate.
And you told already about what kinds of bats are going to your center. So it's healthy bats, but it's also the ones who have some kind of trauma, like physical mm-hmm. or yes. So mm-hmm. so maybe you can tell a little bit more, like what kinds of traumas do they get and how do they get them?
Different kind of traumas and injuries. Most of it's broken forearm, broken bones of the wing, because their wings are very fragile, they are very thin, and your bones are very thin. Usually people or, for example, cats, dogs, pets, if they catch a bat, they can broke it down. And if people don't know how to behave correctly, or they're, for example, scary, or they throw them away from the window, for example, from 12th floor, and they fall down on the ground, they can broke their wings, other parts of the body. So fractures are really very, very different, sometimes because of frost, sometimes because of bites, as I told you, cats and dogs. Sometimes we have damaged wing membrane, and for example, wing membrane, it's not so difficult, it can regrow, it can heal. And sometimes we even get pregnant bats, because they have such an interesting biological process, it's called delay of pregnancy. So for example, if you found a bat in winter but you don't hibernate it, her, yeah, female, the pregnancy will start because of warm temperatures. And sometimes we get pregnant females in winter, in February, for example, because people didn't know that you need to keep the bed in cold condition. And they start to become pregnant. They have a delay of pregnancy. Usually they mate in autumn, then they sleep, hibernate, and then they became pregnant in spring. So sometimes we have such pregnant females, and they give birth at our center. We have babies, and we release them, actually. We release all babies who are healthy, strong enough, can fly. We train them in our flying cage in Feldmanica Park, and then we release them. And we have, sometimes we even have eye fractures with eyes, with ears, with bellies. I don't remember the English name, but once we had problem with the belly. So different kind of injuries, but I guess majority of them, maybe 80% of them, are broken bones of the wings.
And like you said, after this winter time, you release them into the wild. So it was also a few weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of the March, you also this year you released the bats. So where did you did it, and how much of them, and how it went?
Yeah, usually it's end of March, beginning of April, when weather is getting warmer and nights has positive night temperature. We release our bats back to wild, and we have this annual bat release festival event. This year it's 13 year since we organized this event. We started to organize it in Kharkiv, but now as we grew as organization, we spread our activities to many other cities, and this year we had bat release festivals in 11 cities, in Kharkiv, Poltava, Dnipro, Kyiv, Lviv, Rivne, Chernivtsi, Vinnytsia. So 11 cities. Yeah, it's the most powerful outreach event what we have. We invite people, like everyone who want to see live bat and who want to help them to fly. We give gloves, or people come with their own gloves, and we give a chance to handle a bat and release it back to the wild. It's very nice event, very happy for us event, because we release these animals and they can continue live in nature. And sometimes we even have recaptures of such released bats, because we mark them, we use bat rings, special rings, and put them on a forearm, and we have many recaptures. So we know that this works, yeah, and this is very important to released them and they survive. Sometimes they even got trapped twice. For example, we rescued, released, then it came again to our center mm-hmm. and we released it a second time. So we have very different stories, but yeah, it's always happy when we release them back to wild mm-hmm. because they are wild animals. They are not supposed to be in captivity. No, apart from bats with fractures, unfortunately, mm-hmm. if they can't fly, we don't release them because they can't survive in nature.
And so they stay at the place where those mm-hmm. centers are, like, for the whole time?
Yes, they stay for their whole life. Mm-hmm. It depends how long they can live. The oldest bat which we have up to now, it's 8 years. So they continue to stay with us. Mm-hmm. If conditions are well, whole summer they stay in Filmoneka Park, in this rural area, private zoo, in our flying cage. Mm-hmm. It is situated in the forest, so we put cages in the flying cage, and bats live almost like semi-natural conditions they live. So they have quite good conditions and regular checks from our veterinarians. We have two veterinarians in our team. They check their conditions regularly. And sometimes, as I told you, these injured females, they can give birth to bat pups. And then we raise them and we release, at least we can release pups. Mothers probably will stay with us, but pups are free and we return them back to wild.
And do you usually release them only in forests, anywhere in the nature?
No, as I told you, they are synanthropical species. Yeah, mm-hmm. they live in cities, so it's quite normal to release them even within the city. But we try to find the place without stray cats, stray mm-hmm. dogs, mm-hmm. because sometimes they can fall down and they need a second chance to fly. So we try to go a bit far from roads, from stray animals, like somewhere in the park. It's usually normal. In Kharkiv, we organize bat release festival in this Felmaneka Park, in this mm-hmm. private zoo. And it's like forestry area, very nice for bats and close mm-hmm. to forests. And then they find their new roots. In summer, they live in tree hollows, I mean noctules. They live in tree hollows, so they can find hollows just right after the release.
How much do you spend on maintaining all these centers, the gathering points, and to do all this work? Like, is it expensive, and do you have donations and so on?
Yeah, it's quite expensive. The bad thing is that our government doesn't support us, so we don't mm-hmm. have governmental support mm-hmm. funding at all. For many years up to COVID, we lived funded by Filmoneka Park, by this private zoo, and mm-hmm. actually he helped us to organize a bat rehab center. But since that, we lost his funding, and now we mostly live from donations and from grants from abroad. So we do a lot of fundraising, and from time to time we get grants, unfortunately, not Ukrainian, mm-hmm. But from abroad, like from different countries abroad. Luckily, they understand bat conservation needs and they mm-hmm. help us. And we have a big support from people as in Ukraine, as abroad, international community. And thanks to that support, we survived, because in the beginning of war, we were not sure if we can stay with all our activities, with all our work, because we were out of money. Yeah, we were very close to closing up our bat rehab center, but thanks to international community and people, they wrote us so many letters of support, good warm words, and send donations and ask, like, please keep going. And if you need any help, even the people told us, some of our colleagues and friends told us, if you need help, you can move your bat rehab center together with bats abroad, for example, to Poland. Mm-hmm. yeah, we were invited to come with our beds abroad. Of course, it's impossible. It's impossible not only because of some transportation, it's possible because beds are officially protected in Ukraine and it was impossible to get them out of the country. But it was very nice to hear that all support, and after 2 months, we realized that we will survive thanks to that support of people, just ordinary people and our colleagues. Of course, we have big community of colleagues from all around the world now, and that's how we survive. But still, we spend a lot of money. I can't say you exact numbers, but the majority of money goes for salaries. All those people who take care of beds, to feed them. As I told you, it's very time consuming when you need to sit in winter for 10, 12 hours sometime and just feed beds. For example, we have 300-400 of beds per day to feed in winter. And it's very time consuming. So the majority of our money goes to salaries. And the second part is food. All these insects, mealworms, we buy them. We buy them because, for example, for winter, we need up to 150 kilograms of insects. And they cost a lot. So we buy these insects. And of course, we spend a lot of money for electricity. As I told you, we have 8, sometimes 9 fridges, and we pay this rent of the office and electricity. Mm-hmm. Now electricity is quite expensive in Ukraine, so keeping Bed Rehab Center is not cheap. We are very grateful and thankful for all those people who support us and foundations, international foundations, who believe in us and support us.
And this center, is your work at the center the main work that you do? It takes the whole of your time or most of your time?
Yes, it's not even it's not even a job. It's not even a work. For me, it's way of life. I've been doing this for more than 15 years, and I can't imagine me apart from beds and Bed Rehab Center. So, of course, it takes majority of my time, and we work as NGO now, so we are non-governmental organization, and it takes almost all of my time. I have a second job at National Biosphere Reserve, nature protected area, but majority of my time, of course, goes to bed rehabilitation, beds, communicate with people, stakeholders, agencies, and not even with animals. I mostly work with people now. Because we understood that their future, pet's future, depends on people, on their attitude. And we can't save all pets in our country. Unfortunately, we just can't. We don't have enough effort to save all of them. But I realized that we need to change that attitude towards these animals. And now we work a lot with people. We do a lot of outreach activities. We communicate with, as I told you, stakeholders, with building companies, with rescue centers, other rescue centers, even this kind of people rescue centers. So that's big part of my life, and not only mine, but my co-leader and my co-founder of our center and all our team. We are not, it's not a job for us. It's really our way of life, and we devote it for beds.
Yeah, well, that was one of my questions, why it is important for you, because of course, we know that there are people who are rescuing pets now during the war, the wild animals, helping them, doing the rehabilitation and so on. And I was wondering, why bats? Why it is important to you to do this, and why not some other animals? Why bats?
For example, bats, they are 1/4 of all mammals in general. So they are really big in numbers, mammal group. That's first. The second thing is that bats are key elements of biodiversity in general, because they dependent on insects. and they are very good bio indicators of biodiversity levels. And in our country, in Ukraine, they are protected. Officially, they are protected. We call it a red list. We have such a book of red listed animals, and all of them are protected. But instead of that, like, measures of protection are not enough. People still can kill them, and what I've told you about our battery hub center, so they still need a lot of protection and conservation. And actually, we started, me and my colleague who is co-founder of our center, Anton, we started as pet researchers. We are scientists originally, so we started from studying these interesting nocturnal animals. We don't know so much about them, about their distribution, about their life, and we studied them for many years. But then when we encountered that bats suffer from people in our home city, and we saw all these thousands of bats dying on the ground, we realized that we just can't stand by. We need to do something. Yeah, we need to rescue them. That's how actually we started to take them to our homes. For example, I kept them in my home fridge in the beginning of our activities here. Mm-hmm. Before we had the center, I kept them at home because I just can't stand that they die on the street. So I bring them home. And that's how we started to rescue them, rehabilitate. And then the story became popular on the TV, in media, and we got the support of Filharmonika Park. And this topic became very interesting. And now we have many followers who started doing the same, not even in Ukraine, but for example, similar center arose in Belarus, then in Moscow Zoo. So yeah, bats are very interesting wild animals, and as I told you, they are very good bioindicators of biodiversity in general, and they play key role in our ecosystems. For example, in our region, temperate region, they are main pest controls. They eat a lot of insects, and among other insects, there are pests. So they protect our fields, gardens, forests from pests. That's the biggest their role. Yeah, we need to appreciate that role, because in many countries, bats are declining in numbers, in species. In US, for example, they have huge problem with white nose syndrome, where millions of bats die because of little fungi who affect them on hibernation. In Western Europe, I'm not sure about your country, but in Western Europe, for example, France, Germany, bats decline in numbers, especially noctules, because of wind farms are getting more and more popular, but unfortunately they kill bats and birds during migration. And they are declining, and scientists are like speaking loud that we have less and less bats. And what that mean? That it means that we will spend more money for pest control instead of bats. This is the biggest threat, that we can lose our bats, who help us a lot because they eat a lot. They eat huge numbers of insects. And we really need to appreciate their biggest role as pest controls.
Thank you for this interview. It was very interesting, and thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for asking and for your interest and questions.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
Paldies Rihardam, kurš sarunājās ar Aļonu Priļucku, Ukrainas sikspārņu rehabilitācijas centra līdzdibinātāju un vadītāju Harkivā. Nu, jā. Pirmkārt, uzzināju ļoti daudz par sikspārņiem. Paldies, Rihard. Otrkārt, tiešām šī te apņemšanās palīdzēt, nezinu, vai sikspārņus var saukt par mūsu mazajiem brāļiem, bet palīdzēt dzīvām radībām, neskatoties uz šo te ikdienas apdraudējumu dzīvībai, nu, tas ir kaut kas tāds, ko tu klausies, it kā mēģini saprast, bet vai tiešām es varu saprast līdz galam? Visdrīzāk nē, nu, jā, atliek tik pavērt mutu, klausīties, apbrīnot šos cilvēkus un turēt īkšķus par viņiem un par Ukraiņu kopumā. Bet katrā ziņā es jau esmu apskatījies dažas bildītes, ko Aļona ir atsūtījusi, un es teikšu tā, šoreiz tiešām ļoti, ļoti iesaku apskatīties nedēļas nogalē arī LSM LV portālu, kur būs šīs intervijas rakstiskā versija, un tās bildes no jums ir jāredz, kā tie mazie sikspārniņi tiek baroti ar stārpiņiem, un kā viņi pārziemo ielikt maisiņos un iekārt leduskapī, nu jā, kaut kas tāds nav redzams katru dienu, no sirds iesaku.
Jā, šī nu laikam tiešām būs tā reize, kad iesakām aplūkot arī ar acīm, ne tikai baudīt ar ausīm interviju, nedēļas nogalē tiešām lsm.lv to varēs arī izdarīt. Nu, varbūt kādu būs Aļona iedvesmojusi šeit Latvijā izveidot kādu mazu centriņu sikspārņu glābšanai. Es gan nezinu, cik daudz mums to sikspārņu godīgi teikšu Latvijā ir un cik daudz šādu problēmu mums šeit ir. Katrā gadījumā varbūt kāds būs iedvesmots vismaz vēl vairāk noskaidrot par sikspārņiem vai kāds būs atrunāts no bailēm pret šiem dzīvniekiem.
Richard, neliela mācības stunda no Wikipēdijas. Latvijā dzīvo 16 sikspārņu sugas un lielākā daļa no tām ir iekļauts sarkanajā grāmatā. Tālūk.
Tas gan bija ātri.
Jā, bet tie, kuri grib kaut ko mums vairāk pastāstīt par sikspārņiem Latvijā vai kur citur, tie var mums rakstīt uz drošinātājs@lsm.lv. Padalieties ar šo interviju, aizsūtiet saviem draugiem sikspārņu mīļiem un visiem citiem dzīvās radības piekritējiem. Un ieliedziet mums lūdzu, ja patika, tad ikšķīži zvaigznītes, kas nu kurā platformā jāliek, rakstiet sociālos tīklos mums un par mums, lietojiet mierkļbirka drošinātājs, tas viss palīdz mums sasniegt jaunu auditoriju, vēl plašāku auditoriju, un es, protams, vienlaicīgi uzreiz izsaku dziļu pateicību tai auditorijai, kas ir ar mums ik nedēļu. Pagājušajā nedēļā biju Īrijā, arī tur sastapu drošinātāju klausītājus, izrādās, mūsu klausās arī tur. Liels prieks un liels sveiciens visiem mūsu klausītājiem gan Īrijā, gan Latvijā, gan vis kaut kur citur. Jā, varbūt arī atrakstiet, no kurienes jūs mūsu klausāties. Tas mums varētu būt interesanti. Tas šai reizei viss.
Ar nepacietību gaidām jūs arī nākamajā epizodē, kas jau būs pavisam drīz, nākam ceturtdien, un tikmēr atceramies drošinātājs skaidri un personīgi par karu Ukrainā.
Visu labu! Raidieraksts drošinātājs.